Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Today is Monday, January the 14th. Thanks for tuning in, and we are talking shutdown today. Federal government has been shut down now for weeks, and I have an article here from the Daily Mail, actually, I'll be reading from. Don't often quote or read from the Daily Mail, but it had a really good breakdown of what's been going on, who's saying what. And then I want to talk about the big issue, but I want to talk about a potential solution to some of our immigration problems from the Cato Institute, and it is the case for an immigration tariff. Now, when I say that word, that dirty word tariff, it's a bad word to libertarians, just slow your roll and your judgment on this one until you let me read this article from my buddy Alex Norasta over at the Cato Institute. But first, let's give you guys a breakdown, a play-by-play of what's happening in the federal government today. Lindsey Graham says on the Sunday morning shows, talk to President Trump and he's ready to make a deal. Graham says Trump's ready to end the shutdown as three new polls show the president is taking the blame for the closure. Lindsey Graham said on Sunday that Trump is ready to make a deal with Democrats to reopen the government. Washington Post ABC News poll found that 53% of respondents say Trump and the Republicans are at fault for the shutdown, while 29% blame Democrats and 13% say both sides have equal responsibility. CBS News YouGov poll found similar results. 47% blame the president, 30% blame the Democrats, and 20% blame both. CNN poll also found Trump bearing the blame. No kidding. 55% said he is responsible for the shutdown, while 32% blame the Democrats, and 9% blame both. So, you know, the thing is, folks, is that when you have three different polls like that, or, you know, commissioned by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different agencies and they have similar results, it's a fair game, I think, to say that those results are fairly accurate. You can call it fake news if you like, but after working in journalism and news business for quite some time, I can say that when we wanted to verify our polls, if we compared them to other news agencies' polls, we would often do that in order to ensure accuracy. Graham is trying to push the blame towards the Democrats and said Trump is ready to reopen the government, which is on day 24 of a shutdown, now 25 as of this Monday morning. The senator from South Carolina also urged a breathing period of 3 weeks where the government would reopen while both sides negotiate a price tag for the president's border wall. Graham says, I would urge them to open up the government for a short period of time, like 3 weeks, before he pulls the plug. See if we can get a deal. If we can't, at the end of 3 weeks, all bets are off. See if he can do it by himself through the emergency powers. That's my recommendation, Graham said. Wow, that love affair with Lindsey Graham didn't last very long, did it? Last week, House Democrats passed individual appropriations bills to open each cabinet department that is closed. Those are unlikely to be taken up in the Senate, however. Lawmakers are scheduled to return to Capitol Hill this morning, although it's unclear if that will be affected by the snowstorm that hit Washington, D.C. We had a pretty bad one here in Kansas City, too. None of the votes scheduled in the House or Senate for Monday evening deal with reopening the government. No meetings between the White House and Democrats are scheduled after Trump walked out of a sit-down last week. The president and Democrats are headlocked over funding for his border wall. Trump wants the full $5.7 billion it would take to build it, while Democrats are sticking to the $1.3 billion they've offered for border security. The president has tweeted his willingness to talk to Democrats, and he called into Fox News' Gene Pirro to say he's ready to work with the other side. He says it would take me 15 minutes to get a deal done and everybody could go back to work, but I'd like to see them act responsibly, and they're not acting responsibly, and that's it. He also tweeted on Saturday, I do have a plan for the shutdown, but to understand that plan, you'd have to understand the fact that I won the election and I promise safety and security for the American people. I don't know how those two go together, but okay. Fox News' Sunday host Chris Wallace asked Graham what the president's plan was. "The plan is to do a deal," said the senator, who is a close ally of the president. "He's willing to do, in my view, a wall plus." Graham described a deal he thought he could get the president to agree to: full funding for the border wall in exchange for protections for those in the DACA program, in addition to protections for those with temporary protected status. He says, "I don't want to speak for the president. I don't want to lock him in, but I'm confident what I described, plus a few of the other things, would be a deal acceptable to the White House and a lot of Democrats. I'm just so frustrated we can't get in a room and hammer it out," he said. Democrats, however, have been firm on their stance of no wall. Trump has been just as firm that he won't sign legislation funding the government without money for his border barrier. "What are we supposed to do? Just give in?" "He's not going to give in," Graham said. Hilarious. "Don't give in, Mr. President, and don't give in, Democrats. Let's see how long this sucker can be shut down." Another Republican senator echoed Trump's stubbornness and said the easiest way to end the stalemate was to give the president the money for his wall. "The easiest solution to such shutdown, just give President Trump the money for his mandate he received from the American public," said Senator Ron Johnson. "Please, just give him his money. He has a mandate." Well, why didn't you pass the border protection, border wall, when the Republicans control the government? I tweeted that out the other day. And of course, somebody, like the pedantic, humorless pedants of Twitter, had to tweet at me, "Well, because they didn't have 60 votes. Well, then it must not be a national emergency then, huh? If the, listen, if it was such an emergency, when the Republicans controlled the government, they should have voted to fund the border wall. But if you can't get 60 votes in the Senate, too bad. It must not be such a national emergency. A national emergency is something that affects the nation as a whole. What has Alaska got to worry about? Hawaii? What about the Dakotas? I'm going to call them the Mega Dakotas now, because I don't think we need a North and South Dakota. I think we can just merge them all into one Mega Dakota, right? I like that idea. No, I'm just kidding, guys. But I saw an article about that recently. I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Mega Dakota. Just only because I like the name Mega Dakota instead of North or South Dakota. Mega Dakota. Obviously, little joke, okay? Relax, guys. Yeah, you know, I saw the other day that the FDA is saying that now they're going to start, and this is where, like, the fear-mongering comes in. The FDA is going to start, you know, rolling back some of their food inspections because, you know, we've never had E. coli outbreaks, or, you know, we've never had bad food get through the FDA's testing process. What about chicken? You know, they want us to think that they're essential. Well, I guess the FDA is really not that essential, because if they're rolling back food inspections, I mean, that must not be an essential job of government. TSA workers quitting left and right. You know, it's quite fantastic a thing to see, especially when you're somebody who really wants most of these government agencies to be shut down. It's just a shame that we can't see that happen to the IRS. I mean, they're already not processing tax refunds. So I guess that they see that as non-essential, of course. But the fact that the FDA is now starting to roll back some of their protections, you know, it's, you know that they want, many of these bureaucrats want Americans to get sick. They want so that they can say, well, you need us. See this happen while it was shut down. You need us. No, we don't. We can shut down the FDA. We can shut down the USDA. We can shut down the Department of Agriculture. We can shut down all of these institutions for the most part. We can keep the Department of Defense. Anything that's constitutional can stay. If it wasn't created constitutionally, then it has to go, in my opinion. What do you think? Right? Oh, you're going to get scare a lot of people with that talk, Austin. But, you know, conservatives love their make-work programs as much as liberal Democrats love their make-work programs, you know. They do. Many of these government institutions, you know, they're make-work programs for the big government ideologues. Anyways. So they're saying there's a national emergency. Well, if there was a national emergency, don't you think that you could get 60 votes? I'm asking. National emergency. And 60 senators won't vote for it? It's probably not a national emergency, guys. Probably not. Probably not. So, how about this? Alex Norasta at the Cato Institute published a paper. It's policy analysis. Quite a long one, and one that you'll want to download from the Cato Institute. I'm going to read some snippets from it, because in it, he's proposing a tariff. He's probably the most free market immigration advocate, like most public free market immigration advocate that there is out there. I like to say free market immigration because it avoids loaded terms of open borders, closed borders, right? Because those are really just pejorative words, right? It's a way of economizing on thought, you know, when you ascribe like someone a label like that on their immigration policy. Immigration is a complex topic. You know, if I wanted to ascribe a label to people who are for the wall, we could just call them isolationists. I mean, is that not what they are? They are. The case for an immigration tariff, how to create a price-based visa category. An immigration tariff, says Alex Norasta. He says the current U.S. immigration system favors non-economic immigrants. About 81% of new immigrants are family members of American citizens or green card holders, whereas only 5% earn green cards for employment or investment purposes. That's kind of crazy. Our rapidly changing economy requires a more dynamic immigration system that allows in types of economic immigrants who are barred under the current system. Congress should create an additional visa category that would allow foreigners to work and live legally in the United States after paying a tariff. Immigrants who pay the immigration tariff would receive a, quote, gold card that does not directly lead to citizenship, but allows the immigrant to live and work legally in the United States. Congress could adjust the tariff rate on the basis of the immigrant's estimated fiscal impact as determined by the individual's level of education or other relevant demographic factors. Several other countries charge high fees for visas or sell the right to immigrate, which offer excellent lessons in how to design a well-functioning immigration tariff for the United States. An American immigration tariff, Alex says, would create a dynamic, market-based, merit-based, relatively more economically efficient, and self-regulating system that would serve the ever-changing American economy. This is the background on the piece. He says, under the current immigration system, foreign-born people can initially work and reside legally in the United States as immigrants with lawful permanent residency on a green card or as non-immigrants on temporary visas. Congress sets the number of green cards via a numerical cap, last adjusted in 1990, and apportions them by type, family, employment, and diversity. Blah. Of the 1.1 million green cards issued in 2016, 81% were for family members of U.S. citizens or green card holders. Only 5% were in the worker or investor category. Most family-sponsored and diversity immigrants do work, and they are increasingly skilled, but their skills, education, and the demands of the U.S. labor market are not legal considerations in granting them green cards. Isn't that amazing? Most family-sponsored diversity immigrants work, but their skills, education, and demands of the U.S. labor market are not legal considerations in granting them green cards, right? So, you know, we have 81% of green cards handed away to family members or U.S. citizens, right? Because obviously those people are going to be able, those are the ones who can vote. So they're going to be the people who are going to say, people who are U.S. citizens or green card holders, those are, you know, potential voters, right? So those people are going to get their family members in. But only 5% were in the worker or investor category. I wonder how many more people would love to invest in the United States but can't because of our immigration statuses. Temporary non-immigrant work visas, such as the H-1B for specialty skilled workers, the H-2B for seasonal non-agricultural workers, and the H-2A for seasonal agricultural workers, either are numerically capped or are so highly regulated and expensive that they have low de facto caps. No functional visa exists for entrepreneurs. What a shame. America's current immigration system is more restrictive than those of most other developed nations. Of the 35 member countries of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development that reported immigration data for 2015, the United States had the 26th most open immigration policy measured by the number of new immigrants as a percentage of the population, right between Israel and Greece. Relative to the size of its population, Canada allowed in 2.3 times as many immigrants in 2015 as the United States did. Chile, Australia, they allowed in 2.9 times as many, and New Zealand allowed 6.1 times as many. The bulk of immigrants in those nations are skilled workers, entrepreneurs, or they meet other government-determined economic qualifications, right? Relative to the employment-based green card system in the United States, the economic visa programs in Australia, Canada, and New Zealand allow for more immigrant workers and entrepreneurs of different types. The current U.S. immigration system stunts economic growth and reduces tax revenues. A recent proposal to address the paucity of economic immigrants is to create a merit-based immigration policy with the RAISE Act, a bill introduced in 2017 by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Cotton touted his bill as a merit-based point system under which immigrants get green cards if they earn a certain number of points based on education, language ability, job experience, and other qualifications. But contrary to Senator Cotton's claims, the RAISE Act would actually reduce the number of skilled immigrants because it cuts the number of family-sponsored immigrants, diversity visa recipients, and refugees while maintaining the same number of employment-based green cards. So he's actually just decreasing immigration overall. Furthermore, had the RAISE Act been the law in 2000, it would have kept out about a quarter of American Nobel Prize winners. Whoa, that's nuts. Demonstrating the faults of its point system. Merit-based points in Canada and Australia allow in more economic and family-sponsored immigrants as a percentage of their populations than the current U.S. immigration system does. If Senator Cotton wanted to emulate the merit-based immigration systems of other countries, he would support expanding legal immigration rather than curtailing it, right? Exactly. So, you know, that's what you're going to get from a Republican like that, is someone who's going to try and reduce immigration overall and say, oh, look, this is lying more in more skilled people, but it actually doesn't, right? Right, because that's the government. A fundamental flaw with a points-based immigration system is that it would rely on Congress to decide what types of skills, education levels, or other qualifications should be awarded points, right? The devil's in the details, right? Nobel Prize-winning economist Gary Becker, among others, proposed another way to produce a more merit and market-based immigration system that would avoid the problem of government selection of winners and losers. Becker argues that selling the right to immigrate would boost economic efficiency, raise tax revenue, and improve the average quality of immigrants to the United States. Such a sale could take the form of an auction if the number of admissions is artificially capped, or of a tariff which the government sets a price and allows the quantity to adjust according to market conditions. Right. So the big question, of course, that everybody would have, and I'll read this one part to you guys. So, and you know, I highly recommend that you read this entire report because one of the one of the criticisms of essentially selling citizenship. Okay, here we are. Fairness and ability to pay. So one criticism of an immigration tariff is that lower skilled immigrants would be unable to afford it. Most immigrants are not so poor that they cannot raise money to pay a tariff. Assuming the benefits of immigrating are great enough, the tariff is not prohibitively high. Smuggled persons tend to be among the more economically and educationally disadvantaged, but many still manage to pay exorbitant fees to smugglers. For instance, Immigration and Customs Enforcement deported a group of smuggled Sri Lankan illegal immigrants who had each paid $55,000 to smugglers and, of course, did not receive a refund. Many smuggled immigrants currently pay the smuggling price up front. Villages and families often pool resources to send a single male immigrant along with enough money to pay the smuggler's fees, and many pay the price in installments after they arrive. Immigrants could pay the tariff through private loans, pooled familiar or community resources, or third parties. Financial institutions and employers would happily lend funds to pay a tariff. Immigrants would use their higher U.S. earnings to pay back their loans. According to one estimate, Mexican workers with green cards earn $20,000 more a year in the United States than they do in Mexico. One study finds that an employment-based green card leads to an annual wage gain of $11,860 over a temporary work visa. Some might believe it's wrong to sell a visa, but immigrants already pay directly and indirectly to enter the United States. Immigrants already pay for lawyers, for travel, for filing fees, and for decades of lost income while on wait lists just for the chance to get a visa, right? So this would just cut out all the middlemen and lawyers, right? sounds like a great idea to me. What do you think, guys? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Thanks so much for listening to my podcast today. I've got a lot of exciting news for you guys. A lot of stuff's happening behind the scenes that I've not been able to reveal just yet, but we've got some exciting things coming. And I will keep you in the loop as long as you keep downloading the Freedom Report podcast right here, your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.